about protecting our schools and communities by interviewing leaders in public housing development and educators. We share strategies to stand up for social justice, providing a voice for the homeless and those fighting against gentrification in our city, in addition to building our power as a community by supporting local businesses and holding government officials accountable for their actions. Taking Action is produced by Empower DC. Listen every Tuesday on 89.3 FM at 1 p.m. Also available on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. On your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Peace, y'all. This is Rod Stars.
This is G1. Together, we Rebel Diaz.
And when we out here in D.C., the DMV, we bump WPFW.
Washington.
Every Tuesday, 9 to 10 a.m., Voices with Vision. You heard? Understand. We've been trying to move this struggle from a lower to a higher level.
This is Voices with Vision, bringing you news and analysis.
It's about cutting-edge social justice issues by mixing various voices and ideas
with information, cultural expressions, and commentary.
Voices with Vision airs every Tuesday on your Jazz and Justice station, WPFW.
Good morning and greetings to all our listeners. Welcome to the January 23rd, 2024 edition of Voices with Vision. We have a stellar show for you today. I'm Nefer Freeman here in the virtual studio with co-host Brother Craig. What's going on, Brother Craig?
Hey, good morning to you, Nefer, and to our radio listeners and podcast subscribers. Yeah, I'm excited about today's show, too. This morning, we'll speak with Devin Walker, a.k.a. Uncle Devin, the children's drum cushionist and creator of the Uncle Devin Show, about the upcoming release of his new single, Move the Money, that is poised to become the anthem for switching government spending from bombs to health, education, and housing for people.
Yep. Some of you may have heard a teaser about this on To Heal DC yesterday with Joni Eisenberg. We'll also hear from Pan-African Community Action organizer Kayla Craddock McIntosh about the DC crime bill and why PACA considers it more of a war against Chocolate City.
We'll start you off with a commentary from Margaret Kimberly, executive editor and senior columnist of the Black Agenda Report and host of Black Agenda Radio that airs Wednesdays. Margaret's commentary is titled South Africa's Case at the ICJ Also Exposes the U.S. and the West.
We kick off today's show with the still-fighting Mumia Abu-Jamal speaking on Who Runs the World? His address this month with the Rosa Luxemburg Conference in Berlin. For all our political prisoners, our freedom fighters behind prison walls. What's the call?
Free them all.
Runs the world. Meine Freunde, welcome. Wie geht's? As we look out into the world, we once again view the spectacle of war. It is, to be sure, a colonial war, one fought by a regional hegemon, Israel, against what is essentially an unarmed population, Gaza. For one side has the most sophisticated weapons, including fighter jets, while the other side has, well, rocks. To be fair, the other side has missiles, yes, but most of them are unable to pierce what has been called the Iron Dome, which safely detonates over 90% of all missiles which are incoming. One is reminded of the overweening power of the U.S. military when it launched the Iraq War and later the war in Afghanistan in March and August of 2003, respectively. The Iraq War promised, in the words of former U.S. President George W. Bush, weaponry that would evoke both shock and awe. It turned out to be disastrous in the human and social costs, with millions becoming refugees and both societies shattered. The wars began as a kind of neoconservative fever dream, sucked trillions out of the U.S. budget, and did little to support U.S. objectives. The Iraq War pitched as a search for weapons of mass destruction, found nothing of value or strategic. As for Afghanistan, the U.S. negotiated a withdrawal that left the Taliban in control of the ancient country that became known as the Graveyard of Empires. And although the neocons launched the wars to change the face of the Middle East, most foreign affairs scholars consider the Iraq-Afghanistan wars as two of the biggest blunders in American foreign policy and foreign affairs. What this shows us is that there is a limit to the reach of military power. Countries can mobilize, truly, but if they can't reach their objectives, that weaponry is wasted. The Iraq-Afghanistan wars are also instructive in another respect. They were preceded by the biggest anti-war protest in world history. But what's the point, you ask? Didn't these protests around the world, mass marches, fail? Yes, if you mean they failed to stop the wars. But history has another judgment. For history shows that they, the people, were right, and their elected leaders, the neocon think tanks, much of the corporate media, and of course, the military-industrial complex were wrong. It also means that in future, protests may have to actually be bigger, bigger and bigger, and perhaps labor actions should be integrated into such protests. Those vast protests showed the leakages and, to be honest, the weaknesses of representative democracy. For when the so-called representative ignores the will of the people, that's not democracy. That's the opposite of democracy. That's autocracy. under a democratic mask. So who runs the world? The people do, when they fight long enough, hard enough. The great black leader, Frederick Douglass, once said, "Power concedes nothing without demand. It never has and never will. So make the demand and build. Make the demand and build. With love, not fear. Hier spreekt Mumia Abu-Jamal. Auf Wiedersehen." These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
South Africa's charge of genocide against Israel proves that this very serious word, genocide, should be used more often instead of being treated as a rarity. The U.S. and the nations of the West have committed countless genocides, and their actions must be labeled as such. Margaret Kimberly of Black Agenda Report weighs in.
South Africa's case at ICJ also exposes the U.S. and the West. On January 11, 2024, the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, began hearing the Republic of South Africa's charge of genocide made against the State of Israel. Israel ratified the Genocide Convention, and as such it is duty-bound to uphold its precepts. The definition of genocide is not hard to find, nor is it difficult to understand. Quote, "In the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. As such, killing members of the group. 1. Causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. 2. Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. 3. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. 4. Forcibly transferring children of the group to another group." Unquote. Cutting off water and electricity, bombing hospitals, and withholding food and medical aid all clearly fall within this definition. Not only has Israel publicly committed these acts, but its officials openly and publicly brag about having done so and make South Africa's case easy to prove. But if there is another point which is made obvious by this definition, and that is that the United States has and is committing genocide domestically and internationally. Of course, black people played the biggest role in making this case, beginning in 1951, when the Civil Rights Congress published the pamphlet, "We Charge Genocide," and documented the case against the U.S. government. The charges are still valid, as black people have been the group primarily victimized by mass incarceration and all the other impacts of racial capitalism, from denial of housing rights to decent medical care. If Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, the United States did the same and assisted others in Libya and Syria and Somalia and Yemen and Haiti. This long list of criminality is one of the reasons that Secretary of State Antony Blinken and other officials call South Africa's charge against Israel meritless. If they acknowledge Israel's genocide, it would not only expose U.S. culpability, but they would have to acknowledge their own misdeeds as well. The term genocide must not be thought of as having some sort of high bar that can only be used in rare circumstances. On the contrary, it should be used much more often so that U.S. guilt can be exposed. The U.S. practice of imposing economic coercive measures, commonly known as sanctions, prevent the people of Cuba, Iran, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, and 30 other countries from securing their basic needs of food and medical care. Economic coercive measures are a war crime by definition, as they impose collective punishment on civilians. The Republic of South Africa has done the world a great service, not only because it is revealing the seriousness of Israel's crimes, but because it also reveals how these crimes have been normalized around the world. Of course, U.S. allies like Canada, Germany, and the United Kingdom join in denying South Africa's claim. First, they do as they're told because they are reliable and good little vassal states, but they have joined the U.S. in crimes, and they also have their own histories of genocide. The first genocide of the 20th century took place in Namibia, then a German colony, from 1904 to 1908, when thousands of the Herero people were murdered as they attempted to free themselves from imperial rule. The sun never set on the British Empire because of its brutality, committed as recently as the 1950s in Kenya's revolutionary struggles, when mass killings and concentration camps were used to put down the rebellion. The systematic destruction of records which documented these atrocities is proof of Britain's guilt in committing genocide. The attention brought to the ICJ case in The Hague is an opportunity to lift the veil of secrecy and complicity and make the world aware that normalized practices are in fact genocidal. Every war and intervention, ranging from regime change in Haiti to the full-scale invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, were committed with the intent to destroy national groups. The response should not be to stop using the word genocide, but instead to make its usage more common. Doing otherwise allows the guilty to act with impunity. South Africa has created a crisis for the world and should be applauded for doing so. Now millions of people know how genocide is defined and know that their nations are guilty of the practice. There is now less fear about naming names and a greater willingness to speak truthfully about what is accepted far too often. The nations of the collective West, as they call themselves, have written history and exculpated themselves despite being perpetrators for centuries. Israeli officials are genocidaires, but they are not alone. All of those who aid and abet must be called to account too.
Last week, the Judiciary and Public Safety Committee of the D.C. City Council unanimously voted to pass the Secure D.C. Omnibus Bill. This is a D.C. crime bill that was introduced by War II Council member Brooke Pinto on January 11th. The bill will be brought before the Committee of the Whole today, that's January 23rd. And Pan-African Community Action, PACA, says that this legislation more than anything amounts to a war on Chocolate City. And tomorrow, January 24th, we'll be holding a session at One DC's Black Workers and Wellness Center with the title, The DC Crime Bill and the War on Chocolate City. So to give us a glimpse into this, we have PACA organizer Kayla Craddock McIntosh joining us. Kayla, welcome to Voices with Vision.
Comrade Kayla.
Hi, thank you.
All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time, so we want to get right into it. What makes this DC crime bill problematic?
Well, for starters, the United States has more people in prison than anybody else in the world. And DC, Chocolate City, is saying that they want to arrest more people and place them in jail and keep them there for even longer with this crime bill. Muriel Bowser and the city council, along with other politicians in the United States, are also stating this by backing her with this crime bill. And so I just like to joke that they like to lock up people from ocean to ocean, from Atlantic to the Pacific. They want to lock up everyone within the United States. And this is also an issue because it'll specifically target African communities and lead to killing African people, just like other places in the world. So like, for example, the Israelis are occupying Palestine right now, and the United States are supporting them using our tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. So killing other people, you mean killing by the agents of the state?
Yes, yes, exactly. In summer of 2020, when the occupying police were murdering us, we were protesting this. We were protesting against the killing of Mike Brown and Breonna Taylor, which is why these reforms were laid. In 2020, all the way up to 2023, they wanted to stop us from protesting, which is why they created these reforms. But now in this crime bill, they're rolling back the reforms that they placed.
Mm-hmm. It seems like these crime bills, they're reoccurring phenomena on both the local and federal levels.
Yes. As the economy is getting bad and the world is like getting really desperate, people are stealing to feed and house their families. So instead of creating more jobs, they're essentially just arresting more people. These laws are only impacting poor people, making it easier to arrest poor people and not do the same for those who have money, like for the rich. So this is just terrible. The example I like to use also is like, it's freezing outside and there's so many apartments that don't have heat. So like if I were to go to Giant and like still six heaters for me and my family and neighbors, that could go up to over $500 and that would get me a felony. But if I work at Giant and they're stealing my wages and my time card is not accurate and it ends up being $10,000 they stole from me for a year, no one's going to jail because that's a civilian infraction, not a crime. Mm. But stealing six heaters from Giant to keep my family warm is a felony crime within this crime bill that they're pushing. You're
criminalizing poor people just for trying to survive. And so when you said, not creating a lot of things, healthcare and food and all that kind of stuff that people need, because they can claim they create. Sometimes they make a little piddly jobs. They create little thing, but there's still not enough. And no one's talking about how much the jobs people can earn from them.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and there's all different kind of things in this crime bill. Why does PACA refer to the DC crime bill as a war on Chocolate City?
Well, for starters, PACA has a set of tools of analysis, and we use these concepts to help us better interpret the world. So one of them is being power. Power is a core issue, not racism. And then the other is Black communities are a domestic colony. And so they're occupied by an outside force known as the police. During the summer of 2020, we witnessed these occupying police force killing our African people, Mike Brown and Breonna Taylor, which is why we were protesting, which led to rebellion. And then it laid the form to these reforms that they're trying to take away. So PACA's pushing that this crime bill is a war on Chocolate City.
And I know PACA has the Asada Shakur study group coming up. I think that's January 24th, right?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah. That's right. Is that going to be an occasion when the issues behind this crime bill and this war on Chocolate City are going to be raised?
Yes, exactly. Tomorrow we will be discussing this at 7:00 at the Black Workers Center on MLK. So please join us. We would love to have you in person.
Right. MLK is 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast DC, at the Black Workers and Wellness Center. Yep. And then we also have, and a full disclosure, I'm with PACA, Pan-African Community Action. So Kayla and I are organizational comrades. So people come tomorrow, and you probably heard the PSA airing on WPFW. There is an online option if you go to tinyurl.com/AfricansStudy, Africans plural, tinyurl.com/AfricansStudy. It's an interactive thing. We don't just stand talking to people. We kind of unpack things and talk about also in this instance how community control is the real solution, where people can actually be the architects of a different set of circumstances that don't resort to policing and this type of thing. So thank you, Kayla, for coming on. We were speaking with Kayla Craddock McIntosh of Pan-African Community Action, and we hope to see you at the DC crime bill and the war on Chocolate City tomorrow. Thank you, Kayla.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Nefa Freeman here in the virtual studio with Brother Craig. Devin Walker, also known as Uncle Devin, the children's drum percussionist, is a national leader in the children's music industry and an award-winning drummer and percussionist specializing in family funk. He's the owner of The Uncle Devin Show, an interactive musical experience for children that uses percussion instruments to cultivate their minds, a dynamic cross between DC's treble funk and schoolhouse rock. Uncle Devin and 25 other artists are members of the One Tribe Collective, whose album All One Tribe was Grammy nominated for Best Children's Music Album in 2022. Uncle Devin has a new single to be released in February, Move the Money. While most of his music over the last 8 years catered to young children, this song focuses on preteens and up. Welcome back, Brother Devin, to Voices with Vision.
Oh, my pleasure. What's happening, Craig? What's happening, Nefa? And thank you, Voices with Vision, for always standing up for truth and allowing me to come and share a little of what I know and have created.
Yeah, and welcome back. And like Nefa said, I know we had you on talking before about the One Tribe Collective and the Grammys and what was going on with that. Now you have this new single coming out. It seems like it's a real banger, Move the Money. February 1st is coming out, 2024. Can you talk to us about, you know, what inspired this single, a little bit about, you know, where it came from and what people should expect when they hear it?
Absolutely. You know, I probably have not been more excited about a single than this one here in my entire career. This particular song is something that I've been kind of focusing on for, I've been talking about doing for a while, but it's called Move the Money. And as many of your listeners probably know, especially if they've been listening to your show, it's frustrating to see the amount of money and resources that continue to be poured into the United States military, the Defense Department, all these different places, while at the same time, social programs are being cut. And we see it manifest itself in police policies and cities that try to continue to create these crime bills that punish without putting resources that really is what's needed to be able to help with this. So this particular song, I needed a song that was like an anthem, something that was easy, something that can people can really resonate. And I wanted to also focus on acknowledging and thanking the Junkyard Band, because in 1986, they had a song called The Word. To me, this was probably the greatest protest song in go-go history. They were preteens and teenagers when they wrote this particular song. And The Word, if you remember it, many people sung it and didn't even know what they were talking about. I mean, they were talking about Reagan making bombs, Reagan making bombs. and they told some wonderful stories about how Reagan was giving the Pentagon all of Farmer Brown's money, or all of the food stamp money, or all the social programs money. Now, these were preteens and teenagers, and that song was on the Def Jam record label. And so what I decided to do was to create a song to continue that work, because that was so important. And the beat was go-go. That was straight go-go. And so I'm coming with a go-go beat. You're going to hear the pocket. But that pocket is what drives people to this whole phrase of move the money. And that's what this song is all about. It's a tribute to Junkyard, but it's also a protest. Continue protests to help raise the social consciousness of our people about the out of control military spending that's going on in this country.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to put it plainly, this settler colonial project of the United States, it takes so much just to shift things, and the type of transformation, radical transformation we need. We often, you know, hear people express, rightly so, that we got to start early with the new generation that's going to change things. And your work is focused on younger children, but it seems like also this one has to focus on preteens, one, because of the nature of the subject matter is a little bit more advanced, but it's also very important for us to start that, you know, at that age, so we can really set people up to think differently about the world we live in.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is merging our cultural and political expressions, and that's what I'm doing here. And one of the best ways to be able to do so is through one aspect of our culture, which is music. So you're absolutely right. And it's not exclusively for preteens. I said preteens, teenagers, and up. So even us adults, there are things that we need to understand and we need to be teaching And so not only am I focusing on doing this song, but, you know, I do workshops around this particular topic to help students and teachers and families and communities understand what does it mean to move the money and how do we do it. And you're right. This settler colonial system only knows one thing, and that's through fraud and force. And their force is why they have to spend so much money. I mean, you hear in the song that over 750 military bases that the United States has around the world in over 80 countries. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. But I don't think most people know it. So I figured let me try putting it in a song that's easy to understand, that has a DC indigenous African beat of go-go that people can really understand, and then have a nice chant that, you know, move the money. I mean, to me, that's what it's all about.
No, that's a terrific song, man.
And then there's a lot in it. I mean, there's so many things that you say in it. It's like a whole education squeezed into, you know, 4 minutes. But I wanted to ask you about that, too. One particular aspect of that, and that is, you know, we're coming up on these elections, and there's a lot of media attention, of course, on that. You make some comments. You give us some insight and give us a perspective about these political parties, Democratic, Republican, what they're doing. What's the message in the song "Move the Money" about these parties that is really, it's almost like it could be not just an anthem for the people, but an anthem for the people in terms of this election?
You know, the beauty of this, I believe, about the song is that no matter where you are, whether you're on the right, the left, or what have you, you can pick up a part of this song and say, "Move the money." Both parties, as I mentioned in the song, have been playing people, not only in this country, but around the world, as fools. And one thing about Junkyard's song that I love was that they were talking about Reagan making bombs. The one downside of it was that it was suggested that only one party was issuing the money to the military. But no, the Democrats, when they've been in power, have given equally, if not more, money to militarism. So it's been a joint process. So for me, we're talking about, we're going to Congress and we demand them. This is what the people should be demanding. Forget the political parties and all that. If you feel that voting is important, then that's one of the things that you should ask whoever's running. Are they willing to move the money? That simple. Don't have to have anything to do with anything else. And I also say that, and the president needs to hear this too, because each president, every president, has been equally as supportive of a huge military budget that Dr. King says was not only out of control, but any country that spends more money on its military than it does its social programs would die a spiritual death. And we see what's going on in this country. And so I don't want no one to mistake that this song is trying to cater one party to the other. As I've always said, and I know you all have already said, both parties, major parties, are the enemies of African people. And that's the gist of what I'm bringing forth in this particular song. But even if you are a Democrat and you are a Republican, you should be going to your folks and saying, move the money. Move the money to the social programs if you want to stop these carjackings, if you want to stop the so-called crime that's going on, if you want to try to keep trying to blame it on inner city young folks without really realizing that we don't manufacture these guns. The United States is the number one gun dealer in the world, period. And those same guns come back into our communities by way of the police, who are then shooting and killing and assaulting our people. So I say that this song for me was a way for us to really focus on getting people to understand that this is beyond parties. This is about a human rights issue, a human rights, and we need to put the money in humans. We need beats, as I say, not bombs. That's really what we were looking for.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you and I have had this conversation before about how culture, and particularly art, particularly music, is used in ways that actually help buttress the status quo, help reinforce it and keep people locked in. And you know, with PACA and other people in Black Lives for Peace, we talk about community control of the police. And you've raised the notion of community control over culture. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear the song, because a lot of the arguments in the political discourse in this country, when it's talking about it focuses on the violence that's in the country, like intercommunal violence a lot, and it has people talking about gun control, it doesn't really unpack all of that and what's behind it and where all this stuff is, you know, and you even have songs talking about gun control. But then you raise in the song we need gun control at the Pentagon. It's like a whole new, you know, putting it in a different light.
Yes, absolutely. You got to start the source. We do need gun control at the Pentagon. And I want to say that I'm indebted to PACA and the work of all the people of PACA. I've worked with the organization for years. But it's your inspiration that also gave me the encouragement to continue to move forward and to find my way of making my contribution in this way. So this song is a part of that, part of the work of the Black Alliance for Peace, and going years back to, you know, my Pan-African organizing days. This is just part of that continuing process. And think about it. We talk about gun control, but it typically doesn't focus. For some reason, they don't talk about the government. They have never, the Defense Department and the Pentagon has never passed an audit. They failed their sixth straight one in November of 2023. In fact, they can't account for over about 50% of their assets. That's about $3.8 trillion in assets. They have no idea what has happened to it. But yet they keep
spending money like water.
No other agency in the federal government can be afforded that. Can you imagine if the Education Department can't find its money or Social Security can't find its money? They will shut it down. There'll be congressional hearings. But yet they get rewarded. In fact, half of the Pentagon's budget goes to corporate weapons contractors and other corporations who profit from this lack of accountability. And so I put that in the song. I talk about it, you know, how do you continue to give money? And I think the specific lyrics that I was, what I was using there was that both parties increased the Pentagon's budget, who never ever in their history passed an audit. They can't even say ceasefire, how cruddy. So it's up to us to move the money. That's the gist of what we're talking about. I just wanted to be able to share this, and we provide all the evidence that you need to be able to make these arguments. No politician can ever say in good conscience that they're comfortable giving this type of money to an agency when they can't account for where it's going. And we don't know if these guns that are ending up in our streets are those same guns. I believe it is, because we don't manufacture them.
Oh, it has to be, because the 1033 program, yes, is that, with the federal program that allows the Department of Defense to give excess weaponry and equipment,
yes,
to local police departments, which also people don't think, talking about, I know people think I'm crazy, but not crazy, but we've known that actually, and long, ever since I was young, that we knew a lot of the biggest arms dealers of illicit arms in the community was some of the police. Mm-hmm. You know, they was, yes. But anyway, the point is the police are highly armed. You're right, though. We don't really have a smoking gun, but there's so many guns. And smoking gun, pun intended. But there's so many guns in the community, and we don't manufacture them. We got to know that these manufacturers and these people that are supported by the state, the military industrial complex and gun industry, it's got to be responsible for all this, at least play some role in what's intercommunal violence and what's making it back into our streets. But let's, because you did some quoting of the lyrics, so yeah, we might as well not tease anybody anymore. And let's hear the song.
In national news, the official poverty rate remains steady at 11.5%, with 37.9 million people in poverty in 2022, according to the Federal Census Bureau. Despite these numbers, more than two-thirds of the U.S. House of Representatives voted in favor of increasing the Pentagon's budget to a record $886 billion in annual military spending.
Hey, Congress, we demand from you, move the money. And the president needs to hear this too, move the money. Both parties playing us like a fool, move the money. We want to feed the people, yes, we do, move the money. We got the students, the teachers, the pre-K, the seniors, the budgets are cut, so teachers are leaving. The music and arts, the students, they want it, but just like free lunch, politicians, they cut it, so Congress can give more money for war that makes the rich richer and increasing the poor. So don't you dare laugh, because it's not funny. We have to organize to move the money. Hey, Congress, we demand from you,
move the money.
And the president, care,
nutrition. No more military bases, guns and ammunition. No money for housing makes us feel crummy. We all must unite to fight to move the money.
Hey Congress, we demand from you,
move the money.
And the president needs to hear this too,
move the money.
Both parties playing us like a fool,
move the money.
We want to feed the people, yes we do,
move the money.
There's 750 U.S. military bases in over 80 countries. That's a lot of places. The U.S. is the number one supplier of guns. They end up in our streets killing our daughters and our sons. Both parties increase the Pentagon's budget, who never ever in their history passed an audit. They can't even say ceasefire, how cruddy. So it's up to us to make them move the money.
Hey Congress, we demand from you,
move the money.
And the president needs to hear this too.
Uncle Devin, before we heard the clip there from Move the Money, you were talking about how the government can't even say ceasefire. You know, you brought up that, and I know that's a reference to what's going on in Gaza, the Zionist state's genocidal attack on the people of Gaza that is supported by the United States government, and maybe even what's going on in Ukraine. But you also, too, bring up AFRICOM in the song with a perspective to, you know, protest what's going on with AFRICOM. Why do you think it's important to make these kinds of international connections and bring up what the United States government is doing and the military is doing around the world and express this solidarity with the people of the world who, of course, are bearing the brunt of all this violence?
Well, history will show us that the struggle that people in the United States, African people in the United States face is not in isolation, that it is connected to a worldwide struggle of oppression and exploitation around the world. And so my goal of making sure that I even mention what you just talked about, including AFRICOM, was to recognize that those same guns and those same bullets that are killing people in Gaza and that you see killing in the slaughters around different parts of Africa, whether it's Somalia or you even mentioned what's now going on in Ukraine and Russia, but also in Latin America. All of these things are financed and are primarily come from one supplier, and that's the United States. And so when we understand the role of the United States Africa Command, which is known as AFRICOM, and that they're used to go into Mother Africa, set up forces that represents their interest and not the people's interest, and are a guise for them to continue their bloodshed in Mother Africa, I had to at least give it an acknowledgement. So I'm hopeful that people will go to the Black Alliance for Peace website, who has one of the best summaries of what's going on with AFRICOM, and even support it, join it, or find out how you can work with making sure that we stop AFRICOM as we want to stop it around the world. Again, there's no need for this country to have 750 plus military bases around the world. That money is our money that should be taken care of. First of all, should be focusing in on the social programs and the social conditions of our Native Americans, of our Africans, and everyone who have been victimized through oppression. We can get rid of all these different social issues if we put the money where it's supposed to be. And that's really what I was trying to convey in this particular song.
Mm-hmm. Now, the single is to be released in February. Can you talk about that release and what we should know about it? And also, if you have any plans besides the rollout of the song, is there anything else accompanying it or supplementing the song?
Sure. The song will be released on February 1st. It is the first day of African History Month, of course, in this country. And what we plan on doing initially, the first phase is really just to get the song out. I've been sitting on this for about 2 years in thought, but I just came together with putting the actual song together within the last 2 weeks. And I'm going to be putting together a workshop. Well, I have a workshop. It's called Move the Money. And it has three main objectives. One is to educate people about the history of the military-industrial police complex. Two, to talk about the number of resistance movements within Africa and around the world against this particular police complex. We have a huge and long history, both in civil rights in the United States, but even beyond, if you go look around the world. But much too often, it's not discussed. I think it was Professor Griff that once said that the lowest part of our culture gets maximum exposure by our enemy. And so therefore, they do not want to focus on what we've been doing to fight against the militarism. But what they will do, if they're going to talk about the military, they're going to talk to you a little bit about Christopher Haddocks, who was the first first person killed in the American war, who was a fool. They're going to elevate those folks who are promoting their interests, and it's up to us to promote ours. So what I need and want, and hopefully the listeners will follow through, you can go to Spotify, you can go to the Uncle Devin Show. You can catch us on Instagram, Facebook. You can go to UncleDevinShow.com. And when you go there, you should be able to pre-save the song. And then when the song comes out, the first thing is just share it. Let people know that it exists. There is no corporate sponsorship, obviously, for what we do here. So any support that you give in that regard would be great. But once you share it, then also on your own, start having some discussions about what this is and what it means. Pass out some documents and news reports and all of those things. And I hope to be able to have a list of resources that you can use to be able to do so. So February 1st is the official date, the official launch date. And I'm certainly looking forward to continue to make my contribution to this movement in this way.
Mm-hmm. So you mean you ain't go and ask for some support from Lockheed Martin or Raytheon?
Yeah, please give me a grant. Drummond. No, I think that would be a political suicide there. I don't think that would happen. So
I don't think it would do it. Huh? They might figure out a way to shut it down. Like, what? But you know, I often marvel at the talent. You know, you're a talented brother. I mean. And, you know, the lyrics and the music and all that, you do that, you know, I don't even know what to ask you about that. I'm sure you're just going to get all modest up on me. But, I mean, I don't know how you think of these, you know, things. I love the song. I don't know. I mean, as soon as you let me hear it, I was like, dang, this is something. We gotta play this. I can't wait. So I had to run and get my exclusive first, what you call it, breaking interview.
Breaking news. Well, I think that, thank you, first of all. I appreciate that, and I receive it. I grew up in Go-Go. I was born in D.C., live in D.C., but I was raised in C. Pleasant, Maryland. Go-Go is in my blood. So those African rhythms that you hear on the conga, and in the song, you're going to hear the congas, the woodblocks, the cowbell, the tambourine, the drum, and then just some funky rhythms that's just laid out on the keys. And I wanted to do it in honor of Junkyard. Part of the rhythm is a rhythm that they played when they were playing their song, The Word. And, you know, especially the conga player. So for it to come together like this was just great. And getting back to our tradition in go-go music, because most people don't realize that in the beginning of go-go, most bands had songs that were socially conscious. I mean, Rare Essence had Back Up Against the Wall, and EU had EU Freeze. It was a freeze on jobs. It was a freeze on money. That's what their song actually talks about. Trouble Funk had So Early in the Morning. It talks about someone going to work and getting fired. They were like, I ain't fired. I quit. Of course, Chuck Brown, he was like, I'm busting loose. Mm-hmm. All these social conscious songs were just kind of led up to Junkyard coming to this particular song saying Word. So for me, this is my way of making my contribution. I think it was Secretary Ray that once said that the greatest way to pay a tribute to anyone is to continue their work. So this was my tribute to Junkyard, who's still performing, by the way. And I heard them just the other day modify this song, talking about Biden making bombs, bombs. Yes, I heard a friend of mine called me. I'm going to have to send it to you. But yes, so they're still performing it. And I love it. And particularly, it was 2021, January 15th, that I think D.C. Mayor Bowser declared it Junkyard Day, and they performed. And they said that the only song that they can think of playing was Word.
Wow.
Yeah. So for me, this.
Do you know if they know of your song? I mean, have you been in contact with them about this?
I've shared the information with them, and we're supposed to be connecting real soon. So, but I've been so busy, I can't put that on them. It's all on me, and it would be an honor just to talk to them, just to share with them, and let them know what they work that they did is still living strong to this day, at least in me, and I know in so many others.
It'd be nice to put together a performance and event.
Oh yeah,
with all y'all, that'd be great.
Right. That would be an honor, to be honest. Mm.
Uncle Devin, I know this is a single coming out, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, sort of, but You know, what we want, man, what the people want, what the people need is an expansion of this single into a whole album of political consciousness. Because if you're able to put what you put in that one song, then imagine how you can really, you know, just unpack things. And even, you know, I know you're saying this song is for kind of like, you know, preteens and up. But, you know, all of our children suffer the consequences of the politics and of the policies. And in fact, they're the most affected. They're the most affected population by what's going on politically in this country and with capitalism, with racism and the imperialism around the world. And children around the world are the most impacted. We're seeing that in these wars and everything else. So do you think it's possible to make more songs, to even make an album that kind of is speaking to these very heavy political issues, but, you know, from the perspective of children addressing the adult world and addressing the politicians and the governments and expressing what it is that they want to see and what it is that would be best for the world?
Well, thank you for that question. And absolutely. I've had a number of people that called and asked me to do a song focusing on voting and teaching children about voting. And I said, are you sure you want me to do that? Because, you know, I say that jokingly, but for the most part is that my concept, as I know with you all, is not your traditional focus on voting. Voting is a tactic. It's a tool. It's a tool used toward a goal, not something that we search for, but we have to teach that history that before voting, organization presupposes voting, because we didn't get the vote because someone woke up one day and said, hey, we're going to vote. We got the vote because we organized and we burned down cities and we fought and we bled and all those things. So to me, that's what it takes in order to vote. So I have a song that I'm kind of focusing in on that. I wrote a song in 2007 that I never released called Walking in the Feet of Toure. That's a tribute to Kwame Ture. And so that's another song that I'm going to be releasing. I just haven't gotten to there just yet. And then a few years ago, I did a song that I haven't totally released in a professional way. And it's specifically for children, even younger children. It's called Children of Cuba, Children of Zimbabwe. And so I think what you're saying is that I think the album is pretty much there, and I am going to continue to move forward with it. And even if it's just the EP, but just to come up with an album of five or six songs, I think it's very doable, and you should hopefully see something soon with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Beautiful.
All right. So Beats Not Bombs, Uncle Devin's new single, Move the Money, is challenging out of control U.S. military budgets to fund wars while honoring D.C.'s Junkyard Band. Thank you for being on Voice with Vision, brother.
It's my honor. Thank you all for what you do and for continuing to educate the people.
We want to feed the people. Yes, we do.
Conclusion. This morning's show included the song Move the Money by Uncle Devin and A Little of the Word by the Junkyard Band. Thank you for listening, and remember to tune in to Voice with Vision every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and follow and like Voices with Vision on Facebook.
We look forward to seeing you tomorrow at 1 D.C.'s Black Workers and Wellness Center in Southeast D.C. for the D.C. Crime Bill and the War on Chocolate City. If you're so inclined, you can follow me, Netfa, on Twitter or X. NETFA free. That's NETFA. And don't forget, you can also listen and subscribe to Voices with Vision as a podcast on Google Podcasts or iTunes or Player FM. Just search for Voices with Vision WPFW. Keep it here for Crossroads with Roach Brown and Nkechi Taifa. Make an effort to stay politically educated, organized, and committed to the fight for the liberation of your people. Or fall back.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people.
Come on.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom. We are L-I-B-R-B-G. We live F-R-E or D-I-E. We lace music with code, just something to bring us closer. Kick true. The young black youth like we supposed to. No swine in our rovers or Louis Vuitton holsters. We in the trench for young 50 cents and street soldiers. The ones they ain't lock up and send the foreign waters to fight for something they ain't got in their own borders. It's us, the free unit, they ain't holding us back. We just score the soundtrack to this movement. Y'all just rap, brat, black on black and clap about that. State trooper shot, Miss Everly's boy in the back. Miss Rogers boy in the back. While we ain't firing back, the boys is gone and they ain't coming back. We gotta go back, San Cole for writing exact. It's the red, green, and the black.
It goes F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K.
Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people.
Come on.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom.
The best in live music entertainment is coming to Bethesda Theater. Peebo Bryson, the legendary voice of love, for two big shows on Friday, January 26th at 8:30 p.m. and Saturday, January 27th at 8 p.m. Celebrate legend Bob Marley at the annual One Love Birthday Bash featuring popular reggae band I and I Rhythm on Saturday, February 3rd at 8 p.m. Celebrate more love at the Quiet Storm Valentine Celebration featuring live performances of classic love songs on Saturday, February 10th at 8 p.m. Peebo Bryson on January 26th and 27th, Bob Marley, the birthday bash on February 3rd, and Quiet Storm Valentine Celebration on February 10th. More info and tickets at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.
The Secure DC Crime Bill is likely to be passed by DC City Council on January 23rd. Legislation that will allow police to detain and identify people for fare evasion, stop people from mask wearing if they believe they're quote-unquote suspicious, create quote-unquote drug-free zones that make gathering in certain areas illegal for up to 5 days, and make possible more impunity for police. Join PACA, Pan-African Community Action, on Wednesday, January 24th for the Asada Secor Study Group session, The DC Crime Bill and the War on Chocolate City, where we will unpack the implications of this crime bill and discuss how community control is the democratic path to adequate solutions for addressing the root causes that lead to crime: poverty, addiction, food insecurity, inadequate housing, and capitalist exploitation. That's the DC Crime Bill and the War on Chocolate City, Wednesday, January 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Workers and Wellness Center, 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. There is an online option. To find out more, go online to pacapower.org/events. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Jackie Luke Mon.
Peace, I'm Sean Blackman, and we're the hosts of Darker Than Blue, your number one source for struggle, socialism, soul.
We explore people's movements, news, politics, music, and culture from a perspective that you won't hear from the bought and paid for corporate media.
This is a show by the movement and for the movement. So we don't just want you to listen. We want you to get involved in the effort to change the world for the better.
So check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. beginning January 5th on Pacifica Radio's WPFW.
Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Andy Shalal, founder of Busboys and Poets, and a longtime proud member of the WPFW family. I'm thrilled.